But that's what's so, and they said, well, your shirt's about Des Moines are all positive. We're like, well, Des Moines, the greatest city in the world, is still kind of funny because it's built on the premise that nobody's that excited about Des Moines. So it's kind of I wouldn't call it 100% positive.
It's like humor is such a barometer. Like, it really gives us insight into the way that people think. Like, the fact that they didn't understand that the Des Moines, the greatest city in the world, is ironic, it says so much. Like, they don't even understand where we're coming from.
Yeah, when I did it, I said, all right, well, send me some ideas of what you think for a Waterloo shirt. And one of their ideas was Waterloo, the cultural crossroads of the Midwest. And I was like, now that's a fucking hysterical t-shirt.
Hello, you are listening to episode 28 of The Flyover Effect, a podcast about startups, design, and all things internet. I'm Scott Rocketship.
I'm Amanda Morrow.
And we both work at a company called BitMethod. We develop apps and websites for ourselves and others. You can learn about our company at www.bitmethod.com. Amanda is not on this episode, but I've brought her in because she knows quite a bit about our guest of honor. And why don't you tell folks who that is?
This week we have Mike Draper from Raygun, which is a local t-shirt shop here in Des Moines. And they also have a store in Iowa City. And their focus is really on kind of quirky, sarcastic t-shirts that are all about cities and places and stuff in Des Moines and Iowa. And
which, if you're not from here, might sound totally awful and boring. But I assure you, Raygun is a cultural icon.
Yes,
of the Midwest.
It's not just another t-shirt shop.
You kind of get your Iowan cred, I think, with your first Raygun shirt. They used to be known as Smash, if you knew them as Smash. They've been around for quite a few years now. They got pretty popular early on with a Stuart Colbert for president shirt during one of the election cycles way back when. And they just keep turning out tongue-in-cheek, ironic, hipster stuff.
Yeah, and they were actually mentioned during the caucuses a couple years ago, which would be about 4 years ago now, because they're coming up again. Yeah. But yeah, so they've kind of made their mark here in Des Moines and in Iowa and all over the place. I know a lot of people who've moved away always take a couple of Raygun shirts with them because they're very proud of where they came from.
They are a good company. They're not great at Mario Kart.
We did beat them at Mario Kart. We have the trophy to prove it.
We created our own challenge a while back in Mario Kart and then challenged them without even giving them any warning. We just posted it on our blog that we were throwing down a Better Business Beatdown challenge, and they rose to the occasion because that's the kind of company they are, which is actually gave me confidence in the whole tale that will unfold in this episode. We are sitting here. We got a full house. We have onlookers and all, but I'm Scott Rocketship. Neil is here. Dan is here. And former mayoral candidate and second place finisher in the 2011 Des Moines mayor's race, Mike Draper. Mike, say hi.
Hey, what's happening? We ran a great campaign.
Oh, man. It almost lasted a full day. You know, we almost had a full 8 hours on that thing.
Oh, so. Yeah. I was like, well, it depends on how you define day. We weren't really working on it the whole time either.
So, first of all, I just want to say thank you for actually picking up the torch and running with this thing and not making me look like some weird internet stalker guy. That meant a lot to me.
So. Yeah. I think it helped that it was a rainy day. And so, and once it started, we thought, yeah, this is better than doing actual work. And so we wrote the concession speech and played along and had other people post.
So if you're not familiar, I encourage you to click on the Storyfy link, which is will be on theflyovereffect.com with this episode, because this is really a tale of social media in action. But the gist of it is Frank County, the current incumbent mayor of Des Moines, was running unopposed. And middle of the afternoon on election day, I realized all of a sudden it was election day. And I wondered why it hadn't occurred to me previously that it was election day. And it's because no one was running against the mayor. And so no one was talking about it and no one cared. And we kind of started talking in the office, like, could somebody with a strong social media presence turn out enough voters right now to actually steal this thing? And you became the chosen one. So.
Yeah, well, I liked what you put up there that since Kat was sick, you nominated me.
So like, I was gonna, yeah, you were, so I was going to do my wife because she's, I don't know, she has a lot of friends on Facebook and everything, but she was out sick and... Yeah, I don't know. Plus, there's the name issue. I don't know. Now, Rocket Ship is in her legal name. It's on her driver's license. But I don't know how persnickety they were going to be at the election office. So that was another risk.
And you are a shorter hashtag. I mean, yeah, that's what it boiled down to.
Yeah. I'm thinking about just making my last name one syllable to make it even easier.
So what have we learned about politics in Des Moines from this?
Yeah, I don't know. I was joking with people that I finished better in the Des Moines mayoral race than I did at as a Van Meter class president race. And I don't know if that says a lot about me or just not a lot about Des Moines. It was even interesting that we were obviously doing it as a joke, but some people were like, oh, I can't believe you're doing this against Frank County. I mean, he's a nice guy. You're like, we're obviously not going to win the election. I mean, he's running unopposed. We've been doing this for 3 hours. But I think that's kind of the mentality. The problem Iowa gets into in Des Moines, too, is that they just kind of have this, well, elect the nice go with the flow guy. And he's not, you know, he seems like he's doing a decent enough job. And so
I feel like with a little bit more prep, we could have gotten you to win. That's what's scary about the whole thing.
Well, that's what we were laughing about afterwards. You're like, man, this guy won with just 4,000, only 4,000 people voted him for him. I mean, we have 8,000 Facebook fans just for Raygun. You know, there's 200,000 people in Des Moines. And during the day, they said, like, turnout is a little heavier than usual. There's almost 2% of the population has voted. You're like, oh, my God.
What I thought was telling what was the people who were taking it seriously and that, like, almost this incredulous, like, how could you do this to Frank or, like, why, you know, kind of vibe. And I think, I mean, not to take something silly too seriously, but I think it says a lot about our politics that there's this idea that if you vote for one person that you must by nature hate the other person. Like it's this like kind of black or white thing.
Yeah, that's what I've always thought is that there doesn't have to be something wrong with the other person. It's just one of those you don't need to have it. You don't have to have him going on like in perpetuity, just forever. You know, just because he's a nice guy doesn't mean you need to elect him every 4 years, because slowly the mentality will change. And
like a big part of what got me to do this was I've met Frank several times and like talked to him. And I can't say that of very many politicians. But at the same time, I don't know a whole lot about what he stands for. Like, I can kind of see the things that come out of our city council meetings, and some of it's kind of iffy and some of it I like. But at the end of the day, like, if no one's putting themselves up there, like, no one's going to talk about any issues at all.
Compared to what you did, which was, I think that was kind of like the catalyst, which was that blog post about, like, TIF financing and you going to the actual to the city council meeting and whatnot.
Yeah, we joked that we've got to be like the only t-shirt company in America whose blog talks about TIF financing. But I think that's kind of one thing we've always wanted to do. And one thing a lot of younger companies are doing is actually being a little more socially aware in terms of what's going on around them. And that's always been my problem with Des Moines is that I don't really have, you know, Frank is a nice guy. He has pretty much all the same liberal stances, so pro gay marriage, pro environment, whatever that means. But if you really look at the nuts and bolts of the way Des Moines operates, they just do the same stuff every other city does. And so if every city is trying to lure in big companies with TIF financing, we're going to try to lure companies in with TIF financing. So when you get down to the nuts and bolts of how it operates, it's really, we have a totally uninnovative city. You know, a lot of good things have happened in the downtown, but it's not because of our city council and mayor. It's because every single downtown in America has experienced a resurgence naturally. In Des Moines, they haven't totally screwed it up, but it's not that it's through this great innovative leadership. It's just that just happens to be the way it is. And so that's a little bit of my problem is that they are nice people, but you don't have to elect everybody who's friendly. People should kind of know how it works. And we'd wanted to joke that we were going to make shirts that say we are the 2% of people who voted. Because there is this dichotomy of like, I am the 99%. And you're like, wow, 99% of people without power, only 2% of people vote. Huh. And it's just, if you look at the equation, you're like, well, no shit, you're not in power. You're not involved in anything. So you know, you don't want to entirely blame people, because at the same time, everyone's like, well, if you want to change things, why don't you run? I'm like, well, I don't know. I've got two kids. I already run a company and I'm responsible for employees. Now I have to run for city council too. Is it too much to ask to go to the meetings, to write op-eds, to be involved, and to expect from our city leaders that they will operate rationally? Like, I hope it wouldn't be. There's supposed to be a give and take, but...
I've always thought we should pay, especially like city representatives, more. I think we should pay them way more. I think it's just like teachers. If you want great teachers, if you want high quality people in there, we should pay them more. I think the mayor of Des Moines should make $500,000. I think it should be something that people aspire to, like that they work their tails off on to want that position and to be able to sit in that position and do all of the really diligent, hard-ass work that's required of them. You know, maybe direct compensation isn't the best way to handle that, but I think it would at least level the playing field a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think he's technically, the mayor is supposed to be just a part-time job, so they're paid as such, which is crazy to think that like a city as large as ours, it's not even that huge, but I think we're the 104th largest city in America, mm-hmm. which kind of sounds depressing when you put it that way. That means like 8 suburbs of Phoenix are bigger than us. But yeah, I don't know. That's what makes it more difficult when I think about it. If you're like, well, then I'd have to like quit my job to run for mayor, which would be a part time. So then the company's not run as well. What does that say for the employees, for the family, all those things. So yeah, there's a lot of considerations in it. But
what's funny about, you know, you posting this blog post and being on social media is that when I read that, I'm like, oh, well, Mike goes to more city council meetings than the mayor does. So like, I got to vote for Mike. Like I've heard more from you about your impressions of city council meetings than I have from the mayor. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I've never gotten an email back from him. I've emailed pretty much every city council person multiple times. And that's what is kind of, will get to me after a while, in that, you know, we don't live in Palo Alto. I doubt you're inundated with emails from 29-year-old entrepreneurs who have built up fairly large companies. If you were to just going to say, all I'm going to do is email back all the 20-something entrepreneurs that email me, I'm pretty sure you could accomplish that without adding more than an average of 2 minutes to your week in Des Moines. And so that irritates me all the time, in that, well, there's, you know, and it kind of goes with, I think, the running unopposed. It's like, well, who gives a shit? I'm going to win anyway. And I think a lot of the city council people, it's not, you know, I'm not emailing them about like a dog ordinance on the south side. I'll email them about like general things about Des Moines. And it would be one of those things, if you would think somebody like me, they would want to like bring into the mix. But even a guy like Chris Coleman posted on our Facebook page, it'd be great if you got involved in the dialogue, Mike. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? Dude, I was at the city council meeting. I mean, right. Isn't that the dialogue? And I've emailed him several times to say, yeah, we should meet up and talk about this. And he's like, never emailed me back. But he's the type of guy who always be worried about like how it seems in public, and so he wants to post it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, like why is the dialogue in a city council meeting?
Oh, like, that's what drives me nuts about politics today, is this idea of, especially like small local city state politics, is this idea of, well, we had the meeting.
Yeah.
You know, why didn't you come to the meeting? A lot of nonprofit organizations kind of work that way too. Like, oh, well, if you wanted to have input on this, you could have come to the meeting. Like, are you kidding me? Like, this dialogue is happening whether you want it to or not, and they spend all this money on these big consulting firms to come in from out of state and find out what people in Des Moines think, but they haven't even stopped to ask. They've spent more time talking to the consultants than they have to anyone that lives there.
Yeah, you figure in the city council meeting, the day I was there, every vote up to our vote was unanimous, and over the course of me being there, they spent about $2.5 million. And so most of the votes, like kind of how it works is, and I know, you know, I'm not one of these people who's like, it's going to be like Mr. Smith goes to Washington. I'm going to stand up there and give a speech and they're all going to go, oh my God, the boy is right. Like, I'm going to change my vote. It's just that before they get to that meeting, they've already talked to like the Hampton Inn. They've been briefed by the city manager. They've come up with the financing strategy. They've come up with the design, and they've all decided, yep, we're going to vote yes. Like, they're not going to bring an unknown vote to the floor. And so if it's to the floor, it is guaranteed which way it's going to go. When we, one of the problems with the Hampton Inn was a zoning issue, in that the west side of the river is C3. And so if you don't take city money, you can just pretty much build whatever you want. You could put like an Applebee's with a parking lot around it. If you take city money, you have to meet all these design guidelines. And so in the East Village where our store is, I saw that as kind of a major problem. With urban planning, they say always change the underlying laws if you can, because as soon as it's down between you and Walgreens, they have a team of lawyers that do this to every city. And so we changed the zoning from C3 to C3B. And so before there was ever a single city council meeting, we had worked for like a year and a half with like the city, with every building owner, addressing everybody's issues with all the city council people, so that when it actually went to the floor, there was no way it was going to lose. And that's the way the Hampton Inn thing works. Once you're at the meeting, you're already way behind. And so they say, well, come to the meeting and participate. And really, it's just let us listen to you with glazed eyes before we vote yes.
When I was more involved, like when I was doing the Des Moines Music Coalition, I was at a lot of city council meetings, and we were working on the 2 a.m. dance law. We were working on the busking ordinance. Like, you had to have, you used to have a $1 million liability insurance to play guitar on a street corner in Des Moines, and a lot of ridiculous stuff like that. And my overall impression of the meetings that I attended are right in line with what you're saying, of this, like, if it's on the floor, it's already going to happen. And then the only thing that things that kind of cropped up that seemed to them like the urgent issues was a lot of stuff about like image preservation and like finding ways to keep Des Moines from looking bad, or finding ways to keep the council from looking bad. I remember a lot of conversation about how Larry Smithson, who runs a bunch of what I would call trashy bars downtown, how he was like the absolute impediment to downtown growth. I mean, they had pegged this guy as like, this is the reason that downtown isn't developing. This is the reason that downtown's not growing, because this guy's running seedy bars. And we, like, there was just tons and tons of really like heartfelt, urgent conversation across the table about like how we could basically, how they could like get this guy kicked out, how they could shut him down, how they could keep him from getting new licenses. And there was no, like, it was very weird because they weren't like trying to find other solutions. Like, they weren't saying, well, hey, where do we find the Mike Drapers and the people that are going to bring businesses into downtown in the East Village that might actually change things? It was more just like, well, this is making us look bad. This isn't very clean or pristine, so we need to squash it out.
Yeah, and I think it's the idea of, it's always, there's these little impediments to change, because they're never going to call out the big impediments to change, which are usually the fact that, oh, Hubble has bought an entire block, raised everything, and won't build until they have enough money or it's guaranteed to succeed. Whereas the East Village worked, Court Avenue, I think, stalled for years because there were, you know, just maybe three big landowners. And so if they didn't do anything, nothing happened. The East Village, it was multiple little buildings. And so one person with not much money can develop a little building. You have to have a ton of money to develop an entire block. And so it happened to grow organically. However, if guys like Mario, the guy who did like the city planning, and a lot of the city would have their way, they would have torn down the entire East Village to build, you know, something else like the Kaleidoscope Mall. I mean, it's these big ideas that they just like throw and hope it sticks against the wall. But usually the big ideas are the like massive failures, like the Walnut Street bus thing with the Kaleidoscope Mall. I mean, anybody with two brain cells to rub together would have seen that that was a bad idea at the time. But still, it's like they convinced themselves, yeah, West Des Moines got a mall, let's put a mall downtown. Without any seeming thinking of where people actually lived, how they shopped, how they operated. And so a lot of the times, like I was saying with Tiff, you're just following other cities of, well, this is what they do, we should do this too, instead of saying, well, what's something, if you look at it in business terms, what's a, like an angle, like a marketing angle that we have an advantage in? How do we exploit that, instead of San Francisco's got a cheesecake factory, how do we get one? And one thing I said was, well, what we should do in the East Village is have a zoning thing against all national chains. And they're like, no, that's crazy, we can't do that. You're like, well, but what about a city like San Francisco? That's a great city. Oh, I love San Francisco. They've got an ordinance for this. Well, but there's San Francisco. Well, we can't do that. And so the cities we emulate all the wrong stuff. We want all the chains they have, but the reason why they have those chains is because they support local business, and the chains want access to those people. So it's a, like, if you want an Urban Outfitters to move to Des Moines, like, support Ray Gun and Vite, because the more stores we have like that, then an Urban Outfitters will move in, because it's guaranteed that people buy that type of clothing. Like, big chains aren't risk takers. So
how do we get more involved in some of the politics before it goes all the way to the House, or, you know, that kind of stuff?
it's, I mean, that's the hardest thing. The thing I did today was like, started like a Facebook page on, you know, just citizens against using public money for like national chains to move in. Cause the hardest thing is you just have to tap into like the rumor mill. Like if you were to try to find out that the East Village was changing its zoning ordinance, you would have had to have known me, known somebody else. Cause it's all private discussions. And that's the way, you know, we wanted to keep it, because if it got too big, it's too hard to control. So all these things, it's just gotta be somebody hears something about, oh, Whole Foods wants to buy the Crescent Chevrolet building. You've got to hear that from somebody. And then if you ask anybody, the city's like, well, I mean, we can't really talk about that. And so then you've got to apply for like open records laws to try to get their emails and be like, oh yeah, I mean, you were. That's the hardest thing.
So we need like a WikiLeaks in Des Moines for
for
zoning related stuff. And
yeah, you need anything. I mean, it's like the rumor mill that drives things. That's why I've always been frustrated by the, well, did you come to the meetings? And you're like, dude, nothing happens at a city council meeting.
Well, what's fun about this whole, you know, trying to get you elected for mayor is that it shows that something happened in social media that people actually paid attention to. Like it was published in the papers, right? Like,
I know. Yeah, we got in the paper. That blew my mind. Like they wrote about it in the paper, and they mentioned the TIF financing and like the official, here are your election results article. Literally the only interesting thing that happened out of the whole election was our write-in campaign. Yeah. And that was the only thing that wasn't just printing, you know, numeric results.
There was a lot of eyeballs that saw it, you know, like Ray Guns got 8,000 some odd fans. It was on the Juice Twitters, and it was on the Juice fan page, which they both are pulling like almost 10,000 a piece as
and
well.
I'll call it now. I'll be surprised if we're not inside the front cover of Juice next week, that little like what's hot, that little buzz section.
Yeah, that'd be
I bet
nice.
It'll be in there.
Well, it's really fun to think, you know, if the city's not going to get on social media, we can still affect a lot of change by doing dumb stuff, doing creative stuff. I think that there's a lot of room for people to get more involved in politics that the city isn't tapping. It's fun that we have got like something going, I guess.
So if this was to have worked, what type of effort do you think would have actually been required? I mean, because we now know that 6 hours just wasn't enough. 6 hours all halfway through election day was not enough.
Well, here, we can do the math, can't we? If it's 8% at 6 hours, then...
Yeah, I mean, I think... It's I followed a lot of politics, and so it's just one of those things of, it's like anything, you just have to turn out people. The problem
Can they activate a bunch of their vote? You know, could county have just called up people in 24 hours and turned around a, no?
It depends. The people they would have turned on would be the Democratic Party organizers, and they would have gotten out their calling trees, and a whole lot of blue hairs would have shown up that otherwise, you know, were like normally vote, but it's so unopposed and it's so such a sure deal they wouldn't have. So I don't know. I think if we'd started on like Friday, you know, like a 3-day head start, I really think that might have done it, because you're heading into a weekend. A lot of young people it's a lot easier active. To connect with young people over the weekend because they've got mobile devices, they're on Twitter, they're on Facebook. They'd have barely been able to raise anybody on the phone. I legitimately think we could have done it. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to, it's just tough to know. I mean, it's always tough to turn out people and know who's going to show up. I think, you know, if you wanted to, you know, win the election, you definitely want kind of a broad base of people. And so to do that in Des Moines, you've got to be, you know, friendly to unions. It's like a pretty democratic city. The main base of county, like the south of Grand, isn't really a large population base necessarily, but I think they're pretty active in voting. And so.
But do you? I mean, because all you need to do is activate 2% of the population that they're not targeting,
yeah,
and get them to turn out.
That's why I think if you just went after, you know, like north of Ingersoll and Beaverdale, those kind of areas, you could actually probably develop your own little young person base to like rival his. And so I just think to stay on the safe side, you kind of want to get everybody in general behind you. So I think it's just telling people that you're kind of a serious, you know, it has to be a pretty much like a serious campaign of what you're going to do for like the city. And so, yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't put too much stock in what people say they're going to do for the city.
Yeah.
Like either. I think that's a thing that's common about the type of people that are on social media, is I think we're more likely to elect the person than their ideas or the things they say that they're going to do.
Yeah, I think you definitely want to be able to say that you're going to do something. Just so it sounds like you put some thought into it, whether you actually do it or
t-shirt.
Not. Yeah.
It's well, like, no, yeah. So, I mean, if there'd been, so in my campaign manager head, if there'd been three more days to do this, I think a simple platform of just frequent and open communication could have been huge. Like just telling people like, hey, I'm going to pull up Ustream on my iPhone at the next council meeting and send it out, you know, to 8,000 people on Facebook and Twitter. That's huge. That would be more exposure for the things coming through than they've had in a long time. I thought it was pretty telling. We voted absentee last year in the judge recall thing, and then so I actually didn't know where my polling location was. We've only been at our house for a year, and I'm pretty tech savvy. I spent 20 minutes online figuring out where the hell my polling location was. Like, that's awful. Like,
yeah, you really got to know, because that when you go to the website, you can download like a PDF, but it only tells you your precinct name, your like precinct number, and then where to vote. And so if you don't actually know what number precinct you're in and trying to find a map of the precincts, you would think it would be simple in today's to just lay a map within that PDF that you could look, or it would just tell you where. But yeah, there's little things like that. I mean, I think the toughest thing about politics is that it's not necessarily the information, you know, making the information available, because everybody else, you know, everybody's got jobs. They have things going on. It shouldn't be up to the public whenever you say, you know, whenever the politicians do something people don't like, it's like, well, that's why you got to get involved in the process. And you're like, really? Is it too much to ask to not have you guys F us over? I mean, we elect a representative government to adequately represent us. It shouldn't be then our job to police them. That's what they're there for. And so I would think, you know, it's good to try to make things a little more open, but you generally just want to elect people who are going to think about things logically. And I think the toughest thing is that, you know, they say, when I opened my like op-ed piece with like, is our city leaders learning? You know, they're always worried about what are our kids learning today? And our kids aren't prepared for their jobs. And it's like, if you gave these guys who are on the city council a test on city financing and how a city's balance sheet works, it would surprise me if more than two of them passed it. Because this is extremely complicated math and economics, made more complicated by stuff like TIF. But they just vote for it because the city manager says, yeah, well, this is a good thing. This is what all the other cities are doing. And they think, well, I don't know that much about it, so sure. And so they have little stands that they take, but they never actually step back and figure out, oh, this is how the city works. This is where we should allocate resources. But that's kind of my problem with it.
Is this like a Midwestern thing, or is this something that we think happens in other cities?
I mean, usually in terms of economics, the Midwest runs so much better than other cities. That's the thing, is that if you look at like Iowa, if you look at our balance sheets compared to a place like California, I mean, California, New York, those places are total train wrecks economically. That's kind of the irony in the whole thing, is that we even run ours more conservatively. The South is usually has more corruption. And
that's because we're going for the sure bets, right?
So add another variable into the mix, and I think this will get really interesting. So pretend that we put through already some sort of, laid that groundwork and put some sort of progressive measure in to allow online voting, right? Like, okay, I don't know if we're quite ready just from a safety, security, whatever standpoint to elect the president from the web, but why not the mayor of Des Moines? That seems pretty reasonable to me, to vote for the mayor and the city council online on the city website. I don't think any old school politician would have a chance in that kind of environment, because we could have, you know, the 800 people we'd sent out the invite to on Facebook could have immediately voted.
Yeah, and that's the... That's always the scary thing, is when you change the rules a little bit. The funny thing is when you had something like when Davis was recalled in California a couple of years ago before Schwarzenegger won, the year before you'd had like a couple regular candidates and, you know, two guys run against each other. And then all of a sudden Davis was recalled, and that means it's open to anybody. And as soon as you change the parameters a little bit, like it had never happened, suddenly there's like 72 people running for governor, when just 2 years before there'd been three people. And I think when you change those parameters, those are the really dangerous times for anybody who's established, because you know, we're the only country that has voting on like a non-holiday weekday, like voting on a Tuesday in early November. I mean, it's insane the way it works. And it kind of just helps certain groups, because it's a pain in the ass to go vote. And so you have guys like, that's why unions usually have outsized control, because they'll say, well, this is voting day and they have access to some people. You can get off work and go vote. Whereas it doesn't happen at regular stores. So I mean, if you did something like online voting, it'd be an interesting experiment to see what happens. But, you know, they wouldn't even change our city slogan to something like Des Moines, hell yeah. So they're not going to institute online voting here. I wouldn't think.
But. Oh, no, I wouldn't expect them to either. But I think that exposes the problem pretty well. I don't think it takes a lot of brain power to imagine what would happen in that scenario if there was online voting. I think we'd have 72, 80 people running for mayor and putting different campaigns out there, because it's not even just a money thing, but just a communication thing, an accessibility thing,
and like speaking just, their minds, right?
Yeah,
like if the ballot was online and you had your candidates' names with like their blog, I would go and read, and I would find the most interesting person, the person that I felt would not necessarily represent me personally best, but like who I thought was the brightest, good guy to do the job, and I would vote him in. And it would not be the one that just had a splashy page done in Flash that doesn't tell me anything.
They have like Danica Patrick is, they have her promoting themselves, yeah. It's so tough for me to think, because the United States still has the Electoral College. Even in modern technology, we still can't elect a president just through popular voting. You still nominate electors who go to a convention. I mean, totally insane. They only did it back then because if people voted for the wrong candidate, then the electors could change the votes. And so they'd elect like the right guy. And it would be easy to overturn just that and let regular voting take place without even online voting. But so, yeah, it's difficult to change things in a big way.
The idea of representatives is so antiquated. And it's interesting why there's not some sort of system where the representatives are like, well, what do you guys think? Like, I don't care if there's not necessarily a poll for everything, right? Like, I don't care if there's a democratic vote on every single issue that comes to the House, but how neat would it be if the representative is like, I'm going to distill this vote to explain to you what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to tell you what I believe. Just let me know how you think.
You guys are doing more work to get feedback on t-shirt ideas for Raygun than our government is doing to get input on what downtown development should be like.
Yeah, and that's the in the book Freakonomics, they talk about the power from where they compared the Ku Klux Klan to real estate agents, and they say the power is in keeping the information to yourself. And so, you know, you look at these guys who are representing the state, and you've got like Harkin and Grassley, and they'll vote totally opposite ways on the same issue. And they say, well, I'm just voting for what my constituents want. And you're like, well, that's weird. You represent the exact same constituency. How is it that one of you is getting phone calls in support and the other one is getting phone calls against? You have no idea if they're actually getting them. If you posted it all on Facebook to say, what does everybody think about this issue? And you would see every individual know who they are. So you could see who else is saying what, and you could see how many people are in favor or how many people against. Not in that you're covering everybody, but that's what they want to say, is that they're always going to hide behind, well, I'm just doing what my constituents want me to do. And it's like, come on. Yeah, seriously, your constituents want you to vote in every single thing, and that involves voting for, you know, an oil industry perk, though you're from like backwater Oregon with no oil. Like, your constituents wanted that. Please.
I'm just depressed now. I don't know. Yeah. I'm running out of
thoughts here. Imagine if you got to live with me. Yeah, I mean, it's just tricky because I'm like a realist. I'm an optimist in how things can work, but I'm also a realist in how long it really takes, and that there's some things that are just generational. Of if you look at something like the gay marriage thing, gay marriage will be totally, you know, commonplace in the U.S. You just need a certain segment of the population to die. It's a totally age-related thing. Anybody over a certain age is against it. Pretty much almost everybody under a certain age doesn't care, at least.
See,
is for it.
I worry, though. Like, I want to be that optimistic, too. But the problem is that these young people growing up seeking power that are getting involved in politics, right? They look at these trigger issues and divisive politics and go, well, you know, I really kind of think X, but if I just amp it up a little bit, then I'm going to be able to reach that segment of the generation that hasn't died off yet. And it's kind of becomes this sick cycle where there are people, you know, pandering to things that they may not necessarily believe in to get a certain segment of the vote, and then that becomes a popular sentiment and it sort of feeds back on itself. So I worry. Like, I don't know, without, like, you could have said that about civil rights, but without the civil rights movement, like, you know, we might still have segregated schools. I don't think that like just a bunch of old people would have died off and then we'd have like, oh, now the schools are integrated. Like it's, I mean, it's going to get better, but you know, we still have to run ironic campaigns for mayor, I think, to change the dialogue a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you still want to push on it. It's just one of those things of the civil rights movement, you know, things like it were tried years before. It just slowly has to work to where, you know, anybody who's tried an idea knows that a lot of it is timing of, you know, it didn't work 20 years earlier. But then 20 years later, things were just enough, like just different enough that you were able to push it kind of over the edge. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see if it was like a real mayoral race, how it turned out, and that you take like this like optimist entrepreneur versus more your old school Des Moines guy, yeah, and to like look at it as a micro, like if you did it as a real race, and I would time like my soul leaving my body as the campaign went and being like, well, county said this, so then I had to attack him on this, and then he got this group of people, so then I had to suddenly get this group of people, so then I was against this. And it'd be interesting to see how you slowly work yourself into a corner politically. And I wonder if politics does that to people, or if the people who are attracted to politics, you know, when you watch something like a presidential campaign, I think like, God, who would put themselves through this thing? And I thought Obama seemed like a great guy, but I'm like, what is wrong with him? He wants to be president? I mean, this must be a grueling, thankless process.
One of the things that I thought was really fun about the whole thing is humor in politics. Like, it's something that's lacking a lot. And I really enjoyed reading the comment thread on that event. And there are people that were cracking really funny jokes. And then every now and then you get someone that just like sucked the air out of the conversation. And you're like, man, I'm really worried that there are people in politics that don't have like a sense of humor, that that can't laugh about some of this stuff.
Yeah, when I watch things like CNN and listen to political statements, it's like I'm living in an irony-free zone. You know, when the Republicans talk about something the Democrats are doing, even though they were doing it just a week, you know, Republicans were doing it just a week before. Sometimes putting things in, you know, a humorous tone. I find whenever I write like an op-ed, Jon Stewart said, when somebody was like, can't you just be serious for 2 minutes? He's like, well, I just feel uncomfortable if I don't make a joke every so often. People start to nod off. And so when we say things like, you know, a Hampton Inn on the river, I felt like I died and gone to a Sioux City city council meeting. I think it really helps, you know, like makes people laugh. And so they really, it really stands out, but it really hammers home just what you're talking about. You're like, well, what do you want the city to be? Do you seriously, is this what we see ourselves as? That's like, well.
What was the shirt you guys pulled?
Oh, about Waterloo?
Yeah.
You may
yeah.
recognize us from Cops.
Yeah. That's, yeah, that's where there's humor lacking, right? Like, how can, I don't know.
Well, and that's just what they said. They're like, well,
you've got such a stick up their ass that they can't just, like, just distance yourself. That's fine. Distance yourself from it. But thinking that it's something you have to make a stand about and stand up for your community, like, you don't think people in Waterloo thought that was pretty fucking funny?
Yeah. I mean, we had a lot of people from Waterloo who thought it was funny. It was just apparently the mayor and the whole city council didn't. But that's what's so. And they said, well, your shirts about Des Moines are all positive. We're like, well, Des Moines, the greatest city in the world, is still kind of funny because it's built on the premise that nobody's that excited about Des Moines. So it's kind of I wouldn't call it 100% positive.
It's like humor is such a barometer. Like it lets us, it really gives us insight into the way that people think. Like the fact that they didn't understand that the Des Moines, the greatest city in the world, is ironic. It says so much. Like they don't even understand where we're coming from.
Well, when
it's a great yardstick. It's a great measure.
Yeah, when I did it, I said, all right, well, send me some ideas of what you think for a Waterloo shirt. And one of their ideas was Waterloo, the cultural crossroads of the Midwest. And I was like, now that's a fucking hysterical t-shirt. It's like, you guys should take my job. I mean, we don't even think on that level of making such a ridiculous statement.
We peaked that, didn't we?
Yeah. All right. I think that's it, folks. So...
I want that shirt.
Yeah.
Cultural crossroads in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Davenport.
Well, the people have spoken.
Yeah. All right. As long as we're laying it all out there, I just have to get this out because I'm assaulted with it every day. But the vinyl stick up people in the skywalks downtown.
Oh, my.
Touting the young professional rankings. And the new one is like, the new one is something about Des Moines being like the number one richest metro area or something, and there's it all looks like stock photography, and there's people like throwing money in the air, and it's just...
Aren't you down there somewhere?
No, Ben Milne's up there, and a bunch of the guys from 87 Central, like Garrett and Van, were up there for a while, and like Jess Miller from the Social Club, and...
I don't get, like, those to me feel like that cultural crossroads of the Midwest thing. Like, there's no, you know, I don't know. Like, the real, true, to me, the real Des Moines is the attitude that's coming out of your store. It's the Des Moines hell yes. Like, that to me is the authentic Des Moines. And again, it's kind of the same problem that you're talking about of using the same financing and zoning models as other cities. We're also communicating in the same way as all these other cities.
Yeah, I went to the DCA had a had like a meeting of people to do like figure out what was gonna be a new slogan for downtown, and so they invited me, and this was like the last meeting I ever got invited to by the DCA, because they said what if you heard the phrase, what's the first thing that comes to mind, but downtown, it's where you want to be. And I'd be like, I would think when I heard that, shit, the DCA just wasted another $200,000 coming up with a total crap slogan for downtown. And they're like, right.
I also love how much of their marketing budget seems to be dedicated to marketing their organization.
Yeah.
Like, and not any of the, like, businesses or activities that happen down here.
When you watch CBS, half the commercials are just for other stuff on CBS. I mean, it's just self-perpetuation.
Well, that's like those publications that are putting out those lists, right? Like, those publications, if you go to their site day in, day out, they put out like 10, 15 lists of like bullshit every day. I would hope that we could snag one once a month, right? Like, I would hope just by, you know, 104th largest city in the United States of America, you know, every 10 days we should be getting one, not every 2 months.
Yeah. Top 10 of the 103rd through 120th biggest cities in America.
No joke. I saw a commercial the other day for Urbandale, like just for the community, just for Urbandale. And I can't remember the exact number, but the way it was like, Urbandale was ranked the 48th best place to live in something or other. I'm like, really? Like, we're pulling out 48th? A, you need a copy editor, because I would have said in the top 50. That sounds kind of cool. But like, is the 48th best? Like, not so great.
I just wish that, you know, a lot of the people around Des Moines would let the people in Des Moines do what's best for us, right? Like, if you were to think about like orchestrate management, when they go to build a new restaurant, do you think that they're like, I think we should build another Django? Right? Do another one of those, because that worked. But could you imagine, like, Hampton Inn? Right? What would that meeting be like? Like,
yeah, they're not thinking about Des Moines.
Yeah.
If they were like,
we need another location in Des Moines, it wouldn't be like, how can we make it better? How could we take what we have already done and then, like, find a new way of expressing ourselves? No, you would just put another Hampton Inn, like, a few blocks down.
Yeah, I mean, there's no money in reinventing the wheel. When we used to do... like custom web design, that's what you realize is if you want to make money in web design, you build a template and sell it to everybody you know. If you're actually trying to deliver quality products to people and redesign it every time, whew, that is going to be slow going. You're going to develop really cool stuff, but it's just that's why some of the biggest ones, and that's the thing is some of these big chains, there's no money in recalculating their system. And so people said, well, Mike, one of the things you forgot is that you know, a Hampton Inn is going to produce jobs. It's like, really? I mean, I hope the Mexicans who work there shop at a Walmart in Des Moines, so we at least get some sales tax out of it. But you're like, what kind of jobs do you hope? Like, is that how...
I'm never going to be able to get you elected mayor now.
Is that how you view the city? Is like, oh, these are the jobs that we need. Or, you know, and they said, well, you know, the Soho building that you're in was to finance too, unlike, you know, and so is the mayor, and so is the Hampton Inn. You're like, yeah, but our building was for a TIF project in an East Village that was a block big, and it was going to be 40, like, two purchased housing units and 12 retail bays. Of those 12 retail bays now, three of those owner, like, all of them own property downtown, three in my building, employ upwards of 45 people, and it's all local. Giving money to an out-of-state corporation to build a hotel that will employ minimum wage people is really not the same.
And if you want some kind of community or cultural impact, what I love about Raygun and now that the team at 87 Central is that, and businesses like Mars Cafe, is that the people who work there are like it, their job is almost like a platform to do other stuff. Like they're pursuing art careers and music careers and, you know, just doing other interesting things that contribute to the community that you're not going to get out of somebody. You're probably not going to get out of somebody who's moving luggage at a Hampton Inn.
Yeah. And even orchestrate management, when I was talking to Paul Rottenberg about it, he said, well, any of our employees, we encourage them to sit on a board of like an organization and they can miss time at work. They'll still get paid if they're at those board meetings because we think community involvement is good. And I mean, it's good from a marketing standpoint in that, you know, your name of the store is out there, but it's good just to, you know, build the community. There's something, you know, innate about that. And you're not going to make as much money doing it, but it's just kind of, you know, then you get into the whole farther reaches of what is the point of life? You know, is it to make money? Is it to be involved in a community? And the people you want are the people who want to be involved in the community. If the only way that we're going to get a out-of-state company to move here is with financial incentives, you're already, that's like picking up a girl who met you while she was cheating on her boyfriend drunk. That is not the best way you want to start a relationship because you just better hope she doesn't get drunk and go to a bar again when you're not around. You know, if we can grab some company from Wisconsin because we paid them money, well, what's to stop Arkansas from paying? You know, then it's just a race to the bottom of who's gonna pay more money for this company.
All of a sudden, I'm imagining the like debate ticker on CNN, you know, where they like have people vote and like where it's peaking up if people are really feeling a candidate and where it's not. And I think that was a good peak there. I could visualize that.
You just got the impression of like Christine Hensley making out with Whole Foods and Whole Foods is like, I love you, Des Moines. No, seriously, it's like Springfield, Illinois? She doesn't mean nothing to me. She doesn't mean nothing. I want to be here with you guys. And then all of a sudden, Little Rock, Arkansas shows up the next week at Miss Kitty's. And there's Whole Foods hanging outside drunk. Little Rock and her Daisy Dukes. And Christine Hensley nowhere to be found.
And it's 4 a.m. You're on. You're emptying out the case of beer that you picked up just before Get and Go closed. You pull out your cell phone. You flip through, and despite all your best intentions, you find yourself calling up Dunkin' Donuts.
Des Moines is drunk dialing Dunkin'.
Come on over, baby. Yeah, seriously. Bring your friends. Bring your friends.
How many? 8. Awesome. Krispy Kreme. Fuck them. That was so 1996.
I think that did. Yeah.
All right. Mike, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks
man.
For having me.
Appreciate it.